Chapter 4. The satellites were placed over Gist 8 years ago, Artanis said, the words coming from the Hyperion's bridge speakers in the Terran-sounding voice that resulted when Protoss psionics intersected with comm systems. It was during the absence of the Queen of Blades, and we wished advanced knowledge of where she might next take the swarm. And they missed seeing, Valerian gestured to the planet below them. All that. The satellites were small to avoid drawing attention, Artanis said. Their scale necessarily imposed limits on their range. It was assumed that a large migration of Zerg would include many Leviathans, some of which would surely come within detection distance. It was only when the satellites failed that we sent an appraiser to investigate, and found that an incinerated planet had become a primeval paradise, Valerian said, frowning. You said both satellites failed at the same time. Indeed, Artanis confirmed. In retrospect, we now believe it was sabotage. The Zerg were planning to leave Gist and wished us not to observe their movements. With all due respect, Matt put in from across the bridge, if that was Zagara's plan, she dropped the ball. Artanis's luminescent eyes turned toward him. Explain, Admiral Matthew Horner. Valerian looked sideways at Matt. Normal Protoss were intimidating enough with their piercing eyes and long, utterly unreadable faces. But Artanis was a step up even from that. His glittering crown-like headpiece and ceremonial armor sent small flashes of light across the display with every movement, reminding everyone watching that this was the leader of a race that had been traveling the stars for millennia. And not just traveling, but also locating, identifying, and watching over other sentient races. Noble, proud, and powerful, the Protoss had been the guardians of this part of the galaxy for a long, long time. What path would human civilization have taken? Valerian had often wondered if the Protoss's travels had led them to Old Earth's arm of the galaxy. Despite the Deul, the Protoss's principle of non-interference, would the humans there have noticed the visitors? If so, would the simple knowledge that humanity wasn't alone have sparked a golden age among Earth's peoples? Or would it have precipitated their utter destruction? Matt was apparently too focused on the task at hand to feel intimidated by Artanis's glare or presence. If she was trying to pull off a mass evacuation before you could get a force out here to stop her, why is she still here? He asked.
Can you state with full knowledge that she did not send large forces from Gist while we were blinded?
Artanis countered. Matt's lips puckered. No, I guess I can't, he conceded. I just assumed that someone who styles herself an overqueen would want to lead whatever charge she'd planned, or at least go wherever they were going so she could watch.
There's a lot here we're all assuming, and a lot we don't know, Valerian said, coming to his rescue.
But you're here, Hierarch Artanis, and we're here, and it's entirely possible we're both here by invitation. He inclined his head. Invitations of a sort, he amended. Ours was certainly more formal than yours.
Forcing the mobilization of a Protoss war fleet is not a proper invitation, Artanis said stiffly. Nor is it a wise strategy.
Agreement on both points, Valerian said, shivering at the memory of the last time he'd seen a Protoss war fleet in action. But Zagara might not think the same way we do. At any rate, as I say, we're here. Shall we invite her to join in the conversation and perhaps clear up some of these questions?
Do you expect to learn any truth from a Zerg?
Normally, no. Valerian again gestured toward the incredible greenery on the planet below. But until a few hours ago, I wouldn't have believed something like that could happen either. I'm not suggesting we trust whatever she has to say, but let's at least hear her out.
Artanas hunched his shoulders.
As you wish, Emperor Valerian. You of the Terran Dominion received the more formal invitation. It rests upon you to begin communications.
Thank you, Valerian said. Admiral, you have a connection prepared?
Yes, sir, Matt said. Under the assumption that Zagar is using the same protocols as Mukov, we're going to try that frequency and slip pattern again.
Any reason why Zagara couldn't be using something else?
Not a one, Matt conceded readily. We just thought we'd start there.
Good enough, Valerian said.
Open a transmission and let's give it a try. Transmission open. Over Queen Zagara. This is Emperor Valerian Mengsk of the Terran Dominion, Valerian said. Also in the speaking circle is Hierarch Artanas, leader of the United Protoss. You asked for Terran help. Tell me what you wish from us.
Greetings to you, Emperor Valerian and Hierarch Artanas,
a grating voice replied from the bridge speakers. Simultaneously, the bony image of a Zerg queen appeared on the comm display. But not an ordinary queen. Back when Kerrigan was ruling the swarm as the Queen of the Blades, Zagara had been transformed into a broodmother, which had drastically modified both her appearance and her capabilities. And not in the direction of being gentler or less threatening, either. Quite the opposite. The usual queen cranial bone armor had been thickened and spread outward to both sides, creating an umbrella-like helmet that made her virtually unassailable from above. Along the center of the helmet, running from front to back, was a set of horns that would do an old earth rhinoceros proud. The upper knee parts of her legs had been equipped with similar spikes, curving up and back. Her slender forearms seemed to have been made more dexterous, the clawed hands more nimble. For a moment, the camera lingered on a full-body shot, showing Zagara in all her horrific detail. Then the image zoomed in slowly to focus on the angled face and glittering eyes. Almost, Valerian thought grimly, as if Zagara had wanted to remind her visitors just what it was they were facing before moving on to conversation. Not that either he or Artanas was likely to forget. The creature peering out at them held the swarm at her command. An army that had slaughtered millions of Terrans and Protoss and laid waste to dozens of planets. All previous Zerg leaders had been utterly ruthless creatures, willing to do whatever was necessary to achieve their goal of domination and absorption. Had that goal changed? Valerian hoped so. But even in his most optimistic moment, he conceded that there was no proof of it. For all he knew, this was nothing but a slightly subtler ploy than usual that Zagara was using to draw her enemies into an unfavorable position.
I welcome you to Gist, Zagara continued. Thank you especially, Emperor Valerian, for your unexpectedly but gratifyingly prompt response to my invitation.
My pleasure, Over Queen, Valerian said. The situation sounded important, as well as intriguing.
I trust you will find it rewarding as well, Zagara said. You have questions, both of you. Speak them, and I will endeavor to answer.
Let's start with the obvious one, Valerian said. Tell us what happened to Gist.
The Zerg happened to Gist, Zagara said. For the Zerg have changed, Emperor Valerian. The very soul of the Zerg has changed. She who once was Sarah Kerrigan, then the Queen of the Blades, then ascended to Zalnaga, showed us the way.
Zalnaga. Reflexively, Valerian sat up a bit straighter. The reports of what had happened to Kerrigan had been confusing and contradictory, but they'd all agreed that she had once again been transformed, this time into something even more alien than any of the Kuprulu sector's other species. And the rumor was indeed that she'd been changed, or raised, or ascended, to some form of Zelnaga. Valerian had no idea what that meant. The Xel'Naga had once been the Protoss's patrons, watching over them from afar, protecting them, just as the Protoss themselves would one day play a watchman role over younger species. Somehow, it seemed, Kerrigan had been accepted into that position, or endowed with the title or something equally nebulous. Kerrigan had been a combination of Terran and Zerg at the time of her ascension. Had someone somehow replaced those genetics, and possibly her entire cellular structure, with the Xel'Naga equivalents? No one knew. For that matter, no one even knew if the transformation had been an honor, the inevitable next stage in Terran or Zerg evolution, or a condemnation and punishment. Given that Kerrigan had never been seen again, Valerian rather tended toward the latter explanation.
"She showed you the way to what?" he asked.
"To peace," Zagara said. "Throughout our history, the Zerg have always striven to seek perfection in ourselves. But that ideal was always beyond our reach. And so before she departed forever, the Queen of Blades gave us a final gift."
Valerian glanced at Artanis's image, wondering if the Hierarch was going to join in on the conversation. Certainly, the Protoss had had their fair share of dealings with Kerrigan and her later avatars. But Artanis made no such sign. "What gift was that?" Valerian asked, turning back to Zagara.
"The power to create new life on a barren planet."
"The Zerg have always had the power to create," Zagara said. "We have always known how to take living beings and meld and mix and mold them to our desired image."
"Then what did Kerrigan give you?" Valerian persisted.
"That which the Zerg have never had."
Zagara spread her claws outward.
"Choice."
The words seemed to hang in the air. "Choice," Valerian repeated.
"The choice of whether to continue the path of destruction in our endless quest for perfection, or to accept what we are and use our skills to nurture life," Zagara said. "We have made our decision. Here on Gist, you see the result."
Valerian threw a sideways look at Matt. No, that simply wasn't possible. Everything in the Swarm's long and bloody history screamed the impossibility of such a change of goal. The Zerg were in the business of annihilating planets, infesting and absorbing every species they could use, and destroying everything they couldn't. They'd left a trail of destruction and death behind them, not just through the Kaprulu sector, but all the way back through the light years and the centuries to their primal world of Zerus. Terrans didn't change like that. Not that quickly, certainly not that completely. Neither did Protoss. How in the world could the Zerg? And yet, he looked at the display and the cloud-speckled landscape below. And yet, there was the evidence of his eyes. A devastated planet had been renewed, reformed, and filled with new life. And he had to admit there was a certain logic to it. The Zerg were masters of genetic manipulation. If anyone could resurrect life from the ashes of a Protoss incineration, it would be them.
"You say we have made this choice. Who exactly is with you on this?"
"The Swarm is with me."
"That is no answer," Artanis spoke up at last, his voice deep and black-edged with suspicion. "We know the Zerg Command Pyramid. We know queens and brood mothers. We know they have their own levels of sentience and free will, their own levels of choice. You speak of the Swarm, but the Swarm is no longer a single entity."
"I spoke to simplify," Zagara said. Perhaps I simplified too much. All the brood mothers of note are mine to command. The others will submit.
That's very comforting, Valerian said, trying not to sound too sarcastic. Maybe Zagara simply didn't see the logical dissonance of brood mothers having choice, but at the same time being under her control. There's no dissension among you?
I have already said there is none, Zagara said. We are the future of the swarm.
Her mandibles twitched up and down, a facial move Valerian had never seen in a Zerg before. An attempt at a smile?
It is odd, is it not? She added. Here we see the Zerg swarm in greater harmony than either the Terrans or the Protoss. Not since the Overmind has there been such unity.
Yes, we appreciate the irony, Valerian said. First an almost smile, and now an almost sense of humor. In some ways, that was more shocking even than the explosion of life on the planet below. Or maybe she was just being sarcastic and condescending. That he could completely believe coming from a Zerg. I trust you won't take offense if I say that we can't simply accept your word for all this.
That was, of course, anticipated, Zagara said. The many betrayals and reversals of the Zerg are well known. Name your tests.
Valerian frowned.
Our tests?
She refers to the tests by which we will ascertain the truth, Artanis said.
Ah, Valerian said. Well, let's begin with something simple. We'd like a closer look at the new world you've built.
I assumed that would be your response, Zagara said. We have devised a structure specifically for this meeting among us. I will send the coordinates. You, Emperor Valerian, and you, Hierarch Artanis, will join me for clear and open conversations by which we will seek the future of the Kaprulu sector.
An intriguing suggestion, Valerian said cautiously.
Matt, he saw, had moved over to the sensor station and was holding a quiet conversation with the officer there.
But there's no need for us to come to the surface. Can't we simply continue our conversation in this manner?
Is it not Terran and Protoss custom to meet face to face with potential allies?
Potential allies and potential enemies, both, Valerian said. The latter type of meeting is called war.
War is what I sincerely hope to avoid, Zagara assured him. That is why I wish to speak with you in person. Only in person can Hierarch Artanis confirm that I am indeed speaking truth.
I have had experience with Zerg truth, Artanis said. I have no interest in studying the subject closer.
A moment, Hierarch, Valerian said, frowning as a thought struck him. I know you and other Protoss had some communication with Kerrigan during the Amon crisis. Did you have enough of a psionic connection with her that you might be able to tell whether or not Zagara is speaking truth?
From this distance, there is no possibility.
How about from closer? Valerian persisted. From inside this conference structure she mentioned, for example.
Artanis's eyes seemed to glitter a little brighter.
You wish me to step into her trap.
Isn't this worth taking a chance on? Valerian asked. A peaceful Zerg swarm would be a ground-shaking event.
So likewise would be Zerg treachery and a renewed war, Artanis countered.
Agreed, Valerian said. But if it's not treachery, Hierarch Artanis, then it may indeed be hope. Not just for a ceasefire, but for a genuine, cooperative peace. I think it's worth investigating closer, don't you?
For a moment, Artanis seemed to study him.
The risk is great, he said. Not only for us, but for our peoples. If we were to be eliminated, who then would lead the Protoss and the Dominion?
I don't think the danger is that great, Valerian said. Luring us down just so she can make our respective peoples leaderless seems way too subtle for the Swarm, especially since she could hardly take us both without being killed in return, making the whole thing into a three-way decapitation. Regardless, I'm prepared to take the risk. I'll go alone if I must, but I believe it would send a stronger message if you or another high-ranking Protoss were to accompany me. He gestured to Matt. Admiral, I presume you're checking out Zagara's conference structure.
Yes, sir, we are, Matt said. He sounded even less enthusiastic than Artanis. It's unique among Zerg constructions, I'll give it that. It looks to be built along the general lines of a hatchery, except that it's non-living and the central cone is open to the sky. As far as we can tell, the interior seems to have been thoroughly sterilized of everything Zerg.
What's the exterior like? As tough as a normal hatchery?
At least that tough, probably tougher.
So that if something tried to break in, I'd have plenty of time to get in my dropship and get back up here.
Unless they had a few flights of mutalisks in hiding, ready to zoom in and swat you out of the sky, Matt pointed out darkly. With all that foliage, you could hide 100 of them within potential striking range.
For what reason would I do such a thing? Zagara asked. I sit beneath Protoss and Terran battle fleets. If I betray you, I too will perish.
You are the Swarm, Artanis countered. Individual Zerg do not matter to the Swarm. Only the end matters.
We have renounced that goal.
And what of your other goals? Artanis persisted. Once you sought genetic perfection by infesting Terrans and attempting the same with Protoss. Were those to be a perfection of the Zerg, or merely a destruction of Protoss and Terrans?
That was the past, Zagara said firmly. The Overmind is gone. The Queen of Blades is gone. I am the present. I am the future. My vision for the Swarm is as day is from night.
Why should we believe that you have changed your ways? Artanis demanded.
Because I will show you, Zagara said.
She was starting to sound angry, Valerian noted uneasily.
Come to Gist, and I will show you everything. Wonders that will benefit all of us, Zerg and Protoss and Terran alike.
What sort of benefits are you talking about? Valerian put in before Artanis could respond.
Many Protoss and Terran planets were devastated by the war, Zagara said. In some places, food for the Terran survivors is scarce, is it not?
Valerian grimaced. It was hardly a secret, but he hadn't expected the Zerg to keep up on such things.
It is, he confirmed.
You see before you a possible solution, Zagara said. What the Zerg have done on Gist, we can do on your planets as well.
Her head turned slightly, presumably to the display showing Artanis's face.
The Protoss' situation is different, she continued. But many of your planets were likewise devastated. We could help heal them.
We have seen what Zerg do when they gain a foothold on other planets, Artanis said.
The Hierarch's skin was starting to mottle with emotion.
After the near genocide of the Protoss on Ire, do you believe we would permit you to return under any pretext?
I deeply regret the destruction on your homeworld, Hierarch Artanis, Zagara said. But be assured, the Zerg would not need to come there or to any of your other planets. The necessary genetic work could be individualized here, and you could administer it yourselves.
But you first require us to come to your structure and meet with you, Artanis said.
I ask you to come meet with me, Zagara said. I lay no trap before you, Hierarch Artanis, or you, Emperor Valerian. The swarm desires only to be left alone to live in peace.
Yes, Valerian said. Catching Matt's eye, he beckoned to the Admiral. A moment, Overqueen, if you please.
Matt stepped to his side, gesturing to the comm officer to mute the microphone.
I don't like it, Valerian,
the Admiral said quietly, his voice pitched too low for anyone else on the bridge to hear.
I'm not surprised, Valerian murmured back. Anything solid backing up that feeling?
Just a finely tuned gut that's had a long and painful history with Zurg, Matt said. The building looks secure enough, at least as far as we can tell from orbit. If there's a double cross in the works, we can probably get you out in time.
And if not, assure mutual destruction.
Between us and the Protoss? Absolutely, Matt said.
You really think she's sincere?
Valerian shrugged.
She certainly knows the right buttons to push.
The big question is whether the food solution is an offer or just bait, and we won't know which without going down for a closer look. Matt snorted. Forgive my cynicism, but you're not going to learn anything useful on an official guided tour.
Agreed, Valerian said, giving him a tight smile.
But I'm not the one who'll be looking. Unmute me, will you?
Okay, Matt said, frowning as he gestured again to the comm officer. Go ahead.
Valerian turned back to the display.
Thank you, Overqueen, for your patience, he said. I would be honored to accept your invitation with one stipulation. While we're having our talks, I want to send a survey team to examine the new life and perhaps ascertain whether your techniques can be adapted to Terran planets and crops.
I would welcome your survey team, Zagara said without hesitation.
And they would be allowed to go anywhere on the planet?
They may go where they will, Zagara confirmed. The swarm has no evil intent, nor has it dark secrets.
Very well.
Valerian shifted his attention to the other comm display.
Hierarch Artanis, we would be most appreciative if you would join us.
For a long moment, Valerian was sure the Protoss would refuse. Worse, that he might even order a preemptive attack. Then, slowly, the mottling faded from his skin and he inclined his head.
I will accompany you, Emperor Valerian, he said, his voice back to its original flatness. But I urge that neither of us travels alone. I do not believe it would be prudent.
No, it would not, Valerian agreed softly, looking back at Zagara. Not in the slightest.
There, Dr. Aaron Weiland said, pointing to her latest composite false color map. Do you see it now? She looked up at the man standing over her cramped shipboard workstation. But Colonel Cruikshank just shook his head.
Not really, he said. But I'll take your word for it.
Aaron ground her teeth. She didn't want him to take her word for it. This was science, and science wasn't supposed to be run by popular vote. She had objective evidence, blast it, and she wanted him to see it. She shifted her gaze to the woman standing on her other side. Do you see it? She asked.
Of course. Dr. Talese Kogan said calmly. I saw it 3 iterations ago.
She gestured to Cruikshank.
But we're scientists. He's military. We see the universe. He just tries to blow it up.
Cute, Cruikshank growled. Try to remember that it's because of the military that you get to do your science stuff, instead of eating rats and hiding in Zerg-infested rubble. So, fine. It's there. What do you suggest we do about it?
Do about what? A familiar voice said from behind Aaron. She spun around in her chair, her heart suddenly beating faster. Striding toward her from the hatchway was the Dominion Fleet's commander, Admiral Matt Horner. And beside him, Emperor Valerian Mengsk himself, the man who'd started life as a scientist before rising to rule the entire Terran Dominion. More than that, the man who'd brought genuine ethics to government.
Emperor Valerian, Cruikshank said, stiffening to attention. I believe you know Dr. Kogan.
I do, Valerian confirmed,
exchanging nods with the older xenobiologist. And this is...
Dr. Aaron Weiland, Cruikshank said. She's been analyzing the vegetation down there, and she may have found something interesting.
He gestured to Aaron.
Doctor?
Furiously, Aaron tried to unfreeze her brain. Never in her strangest dreams had she envisioned herself speaking directly to the man who'd saved the Dominion. Not just from the Protoss and Zerg, but also from itself.
There appear to be three distinct focal points on the planet from which the rest of the vegetation radiates, she began, trying not to stutter. The points are...
What do you mean, radiates? Admiral Horner interrupted. How does plant life radiate?
Aaron floundered, forcing herself to take the necessary half second to get her brain back on track before speaking again.
I don't know, sir, she said, but the pattern is there.
She pointed to the false color map.
The points are here and...
Wait, Valerian ordered. Aaron froze, her stiffened forefinger hanging in midair halfway to the second radial point. The Emperor moved closer to the workstation, his piercing gray eyes steady on the display. He was right behind Aaron now, close enough that she could feel the heat radiating from his body. He reached out a finger, paused, and moved it to hover over the second point.
Here.
The finger drifted slowly across the terrain.
And here?
Aaron felt a flood of relief. So it wasn't just imagination. The Emperor could see it too.
Yes, Emperor Valerian, she said. A bit farther east on the third one, actually, but you do see it.
I do, Valerian confirmed. Interesting. Those are hills, right? Or mesas?
Probably low mesas, yes.
Any idea what's there?
Not really, Emperor, Aaron said. I don't see anything noteworthy on the top surfaces. There's a line of trees along one edge of each mesa blocking the view, so it's possible that what we see is just an overhang, with whatever's of interest underneath it. But it could also be a vertical wall. I can't tell from these pictures, I'm sorry.
No need to apologize, Valerian said, his eyes still on the map. Important discoveries always begin with small steps.
He turned to Admiral Horner.
And this small step has just given us our starting point.
Admiral?
I agree, sir, the Admiral said. Any preference as to which one?
We'll leave that to Dr. Weiland, Valerian said. She can choose where she wants to start.
I suppose I'd...
Aaron broke off as the full implications of that sentence belatedly penetrated.
Excuse me, Emperor, where I want to start?
We're sending a team down to study the vegetation and take some samples, Valerian said. I was planning to send Dr. Kogan with them as our leading xenobiologist, but under the circumstances, I think you should go instead.
He raised his eyebrows. Any objections, Dr. Kogan?
None at all, Emperor, Dr. Kogan said without hesitation. Dr. Weiland's far better with alien vegetation than I am. Besides, I'm a bit too old for fieldwork.
You aren't really, the Emperor disagreed mildly. But the rest of your logic is sound. Dr. Weiland, welcome to the survey team. Colonel, get her ready.
Yes, Emperor,
Cruikshank said. And good hunting, Doctor. The Emperor said, giving Aaron the same kind of nod he'd given Dr. Kogan earlier. He then turned and left the compartment, Admiral Horner at his side.
All right,
Cruikshank said briskly, giving Aaron a speculative look.
Have you had any experience with powered combat suits?
Aaron
floundered again. I trained for a week with an SCV. They wanted all of us to be able to move heavy machinery.
T-285?
Cruikshank cut her off.
I think it was a T-270? What did he mean, good hunting? I'm sure he was speaking in a scientific sense,
Dr. Kogan said. But there was a tension around her eyes that sent a chill up Aaron's spine.
Or in the military sense,
Cruikshank said flatly.
So, a T-270, more like a vehicle than powered armor, but it's a start. All right, come with me. I'll have one of our sergeants start checking you out on a CMC 400.
Aaron felt her eyes go wide.
A what?
You're going down to the surface, Cruikshank said with strained patience. A surface covered in Zerg. You want to walk to this magic radial point in your jumpsuit?
I heard that Zagara promised they wouldn't bother the team, Dr. Kogan put in.
Yeah, she did, Cruikshank agreed. You want to count on a Zerg promise? He gestured to Aaron. That question's to you, Doc. Unless you want to tell the Emperor you're backing out.
Aaron felt a stirring inside her. The last thing she would ever do was disappoint Emperor Valerian.
Fine, she said tersely. Let's go get this CMC whatever.
Chapter 5. For the past 3 hours, the Hyperion had been the scene of quiet and controlled chaos. Tanya had kept mostly to the sidelines, but from her limited teat power and occasional snatches of overheard conversation as people hurried past, it had sounded like Emperor Valerian was going to the surface to meet with the Zerg Overqueen, while a second team would be sent elsewhere on the planet to study the explosion of life that had inexplicably taken place down there. Now, with Valerian talking to Ulavu bare meters away, all of that earlier speculation had been confirmed. The Emperor was sending a team, and he was asking Ulavu to be a part of it. It was strange and probably extremely dangerous. It also, Tanya had to admit, sounded interesting. But whatever happened from now on, she wouldn't be included. 30 minutes ago, right in the middle of all the conversations and preparations, her clock had run out, and she'd ceased to be part of the Ghost program. Or so she assumed. She obviously hadn't shown up in Colonel Hartwell's office for the formal procedure, but the data work had presumably gone through as scheduled. Whether anyone aboard the Hyperion knew that, of course, was a different question. But she knew, and suddenly, everything had changed. Nearly her entire life had been spent in the Ghost program. Certainly all of her life that she could clearly remember. The barracks, the people, the training, the life routine, even the low-level pain as comrades and acquaintances left for war. All of it was abruptly gone. She was a private citizen now, or at least she would be once she returned to Cor Hall and was sent on her way. What did private citizens do? How did they live? Where did they live? In houses and apartments and lodges, of course, but how did someone find such places and arrange to move in? Where would she get food? How was it prepared? Where would she get the money to buy the food in the first place? Where would she even find someone to answer all these questions? She looked away from Ulavu and the Emperor, gazing at all the other activity around her, a hollow feeling deep in her soul. It was as if she were standing on the street, watching a bus take off with everyone and everything she'd ever known aboard. All her life had been aimed toward the goal of serving the Dominion. Now that goal was suddenly gone. I wanted this, she reminded herself firmly. I asked to leave the program. The pep talk didn't help. Or maybe she hadn't really thought it all the way through. I would be honored to join the survey team. She heard Ulavu's thoughts as he communicated them to Valerian. The Terran Dominion has been kind and generous to me over these past years. I would welcome a chance to do something useful for its people. Thank you, Valerian said, inclining his head. Your insights into both Protoss and Zerg cultures and behavior have been most valuable to us. I'm sure they'll prove equally useful here. Tanya nodded to herself. So Ulavu would indeed be going down to the planet. She'd figured that he would accept Valerian's offer. She just hoped he would be up to the challenge. As she'd often noted, Ulavu didn't always work and play well with others. I thank you in turn, Ulavu said. But this is a service far and above that of a simple scholar. He paused and half turned, looking sideways at Tanya. Perhaps it will also redeem my face among the leaders of my kind. Tanya suppressed a grimace, on both the physical and the psionic levels. Challenges within challenges within challenges. She didn't know why Hierarch Artanis had refused to take Ulavu back after the ghosts had found him wandering on that battlefield. As far as she'd heard, no one knew. Certainly, Ulavu himself never talked about it, but there was clearly some bad blood there. Not that there weren't also some bad feelings on the Terran side of the aisle. Tanya had noticed that Colonel Cruikshank was making most of the arrangements for the two expeditions to the surface, yet Valerian had chosen to approach Ulavu personally instead of letting Cruikshank do it. The Dominion and the Protoss might be non-combatants at the moment, but as she'd seen in Dante's circle, there was plenty of simmering resentment out there.
"We can hope that this will mend some fences," Valerian agreed. "Thank you for your willingness."
"The honor is mine." For a moment, the Protoss's thoughts faded from Tanya's mind as Ulavu shifted his psionic communication to Valerian alone. Tanya frowned, wondering what the Protoss had to say that he didn't want her hearing.
"I understand," Valerian said, his eyes flicking to Tanya.
"And there was no problem with your request that I bring Ms. Caulfield aboard? But as of a short time ago, she ceased to be a member of the Dominion Ghost Program. I therefore can't directly order her to do anything she doesn't want to do." Tanya felt a sudden stirring in her stomach. So the Emperor, at least, was aware of her new status. Did that mean everyone else was too? Did all the people hurrying by think of her as little more than a deserter? A second later, the rest of Valerian's words caught up with her. "Your request that I bring Ms. Caulfield aboard, can't directly order her to do anything." Had Ulavu asked Emperor Valerian himself to bring her aboard the Hyperion? And was he now also asking that she join the survey team? Apparently, he was.
"I've received a request and suggestion from Ulavu, Ms. Caulfield," Valerian said. "He thinks your talents could be useful on this mission. Accordingly, he's asked me to invite you onto the team."
Tanya looked at Ulavu, noting the lack of any surprise that she had resigned from the program. How long had he known? More important, why was he asking that she come along? Did he really think she would be useful? Or was he simply trying to give her one last chance to do something for the Dominion, so that she wouldn't leave with the feeling that she'd totally wasted her life?
"This is an important mission," Ulavu said into her hesitation. "I believe you could be useful. Will you come with me?"
Tanya sighed. "With me, not with us." An act of charity, all right. Still, to finally get a chance to serve the Dominion and the Ghost Program. She focused on Valerian, standing silent and strong and regal. Ulavu had asked that she be added to the team, not Valerian. In fact, it didn't sound as if the Emperor had even considered the possibility until the Protoss had brought up the subject. Was that simply because Tanya was technically not under Dominion command anymore? Was it more of the same pattern that had governed her entire life? Was she really so valuable to the ghosts that she'd been continually saved for something special? Or was she more like a piece of fine crystal? A goblet too valuable to simply throw away, but too delicate to drink from lest it shatter. Did the ghosts think she was useless? Did everyone in the military think she was useless? Was she useless?
"Thank you, Emperor Valerian," she said, bowing to him. "I would be honored to join the team." "Thank you, Ms. Caulfield," Valerian said.
"The rest of your team is assembling in the amidships hangar deck. Do you know where that is?"
"I can find it, Emperor, thank you," Tanya said. "Come on, Ulavu."
And if she was very, very lucky, Tanya thought as she and Ulavu headed down the passageway, they would find that Zagara had lied about everything being safe down there. Maybe then, Tanya would finally find out what she could do in real combat against real enemies. Even if her part was only to die in service to the Dominion.
"You and I against the world, Tanya Caulfield," Ulavu asked.
Tanya had to smile.
"Yes," she agreed.
"You and I against the world." Because for once, it could almost literally be true.
Let me get this straight, Wist said, eyeing the dropship and the techs busily prepping it for flight. We get a single dropship. They get a Protoss shuttle with full Phoenix escort?
Privileges of rank,
Colonel Cruikshank said sourly.
So-called. Personally, I'd take a Dominion dropship any day over riding a robot-controlled box with a bunch of trigger-happy Protoss on my tail.
Wist said noncommittally. Given the mission, he would choose a Protoss shuttle and escort in a heartbeat. But he knew better than to say so. Cruikshank's biases against Protoss were well known, and it was never a good idea to deliberately annoy your mission commander. Still, Cruikshank was right about the rank thing. Since the Protoss had the best space-to-ground transports, Hierarch Artanis had offered to fly over from his mothership and pick up Emperor Valerian and his guard, after which the two leaders would make their joint way down to the planet and Zagara's conference building. The Hierarch was standing outside the shuttle waiting for his guest like a good host, eight other Protoss at his side. Wist had been a Marine for a long, long time, with all the bitter and violent experience and memories that came with that history. But even so, the sight of Artanis and his escort sent a shiver up his back. These weren't just fellow soldiers, but representatives of an ancient, powerful, utterly alien race. Everything about Artanis, from his stance to his armor, to the quiet but palpable vigilance of his guards, screamed that. His guards. It was a little hard to tell from this distance, but it looked like four of them were standard Ayer High Templar, and the other four were some of the formerly renegade Nerazim, the so-called Dark Templar. Wist had heard that Artanis was trying to bring the two factions back together. It looked like he was making progress, which was probably good news all around. Getting caught in the middle of Protoss tribal disputes was generally a very unhealthy thing to do. Of course, if the next military action turned out to be between the Protoss and the Terrans, Artanis's reconciliation program would mean less chance for the Dominion to turn the various Protoss groups against one another. Wist shook his head. Like the old saying said, every silver lining had a cloud. Across the hangar, one of the hatches opened and Emperor Valerian appeared, dressed in full-press court finery, walking within a phalanx of four personal bodyguards and four combat-suited Marines. Wist studied the man as he strode toward the Protoss shuttle, wondering what was under all those trappings. There had been plenty of hype about how different Valerian was from his father, but so far, Wist hadn't seen a lot of changes. Of course, Wist was in the Marines. Changes always percolated more slowly through military hierarchies than they did through the civilian ranks. More significantly, perhaps, Valerian hadn't had a war to run for a few years. In Wist's experience, war was what brought out either the best or the worst in a leader. Maybe today would be the day that Valerian proved himself, one way or the other. Admiral Horner was walking beside the Emperor, the two of them in quiet conversation. The group headed toward the shuttle, Artanis and his guards turning to face the approaching Terrans.
So this is our bus,
Wist turned. Four people had entered the hangar from another hatchway and were walking toward him and Cruikshank. One was Wist's erstwhile rooftop drinking buddy, Lieutenant Diz Hawkman. The second was a woman striding along in a ghost skin suit, her hood thrown back over her shoulders, a combination visor air supply system tucked under one arm, and a C-10 canister rifle slung over her back. Wist grimaced. A ghost. Great. Walking close beside the ghost was a Protoss, dressed in a civilian-type outfit of a long tunic, heavy-duty leg wraps, and thick, elbow-length gardening-style gloves. The nerve cords attached to the back of his skull had been cut short, sparking a brief flicker of combined nostalgia and annoyance. During the war, shortened cords had been a sure indicator that the Protoss facing you was a Dark Templar. Now, with whatever was going on with Artanis's reorganization of Protoss society, all the aliens had cut their cords that way. Which was a genuine pity, Protoss looked enough alike that anything that helped a Marine distinguish one from another was a bonus. And finally, bringing up the rear, was someone in a Marine CMC 400 combat suit, clunking awkwardly along like he'd never worn it before.
"That is indeed your bus, Lieutenant,"
Cruikshank confirmed.
"Sergeant Cray, this is your commanding officer, Lieutenant Halkman."
"We've met," Diz said, nodding to Wist. "How you doing, Wist?"
"Pretty good, Diz," Wist replied.
Out of the corner of his eye, he could see that Cruikshank seemed surprised and not happy at the lack of proper rank respect going on here. Not just between Wist and Diz, but also between Diz and Cruikshank himself. Wist suppressed a smile. Irritating ranking officers was a favorite pastime in the Marines. Apparently, the Reaper Corps had its own version of the game.
"So, are the five of us the whole team?" he asked.
"So I gather," Diz said. "This is Tanya Caulfield, Ghost. That's Ulavu, technical advisor."
"Technical advisor on what?"
"On whatever we need advising for, I guess," Diz said. "The colonel here was a bit fuzzy on that. And this is our armored newbie, Dr. Aaron Weiland, xenobiologist."
Wist wrinkled his nose. A ghost, a Protoss, a civilian science type, and a felon in a Reaper jump pack. And a lone Marine to ride herd on them. This just got better and better.
"Dr. Weiland's another advisor, I gather."
"Well, she's sure not here to show us any dance moves," Diz said, cocking his head as he ran a critical eye up and down her. "Though for her first day in armor, she's doing pretty well."
"Try my second hour in armor,"
the woman's muffled voice came.
"Outside speaker, Aaron," Diz called. "Switch inside your left gauntlet, lower right."
There was a pause. The armor teetered a moment.
"I said it was only my second hour in this thing," Aaron said, her voice now much clearer.
Wist cocked an eyebrow, his opinion of her going up a notch or two. Most of the xenobiologists he'd run into over the years had been humorless stuffed shirts. This girl at least had spirit.
"In that case, you're doing great," Diz assured her. "They told me my armor and jump pack were already inside."
"Not yet," Wist said. "Neither is mine. Got a rack of C-14s and P-45s, and plenty of replacement mags, though, so at least we've got firepower. Full set of grenades, too."
"What, no flamethrowers or nukes?"
"Actually, there is a Perdition Junior flamethrower," Wist said. "But yes, no nukes."
"Maybe they're with our armor." Diz raised his eyebrows at Cruikshank. "The armor is on its way, right?"
"Just waiting on the tech guys," Cruikshank assured him. "They've got a new gadget they wanted to install."
Wist felt his lip twist, like Dominion combat suits didn't have enough gear crammed into them already.
"I hope it's at least something useful." "Well, they think it is," Cruikshank said, his eyes steady on Ulavu. "It's called a Psi-Block, based off the UED's Sigma radiation-driven Psi disruptors. Along with the original function of slowing Zerg movement reaction, this adaptation is supposed to disrupt local communications. The theory is that'll make it harder for them to coordinate attacks and send out any alerts about your presence."
"Okay, that could be useful," Diz acknowledged. "I assume they've been tested?"
"On what?" Cruikshank countered. "We haven't had Zerg around to fight for 6 years. I seriously doubt anyone's gone out hunting for test subjects."
It seemed to Wist that Tanya's lip might have twitched at that.
"So we're the field test?" Diz asked.
"Basically."
Cruikshank nodded past Wist's shoulder.
"There they are."
Wist turned. Two techs were trundling toward them with a rolling cart on which a CMC 400 and a Reaper light infantry getup were stacked.
"Go on, get aboard," Cruikshank said. "I'll make sure your armor is stowed, then call control for clearance."
"I like to make sure myself that my armor is stowed," Diz said.
"And what a great world it would be if we all got everything we wanted,"
Cruikshank said, jerking his head toward the dropship.
"You're on the clock, Lieutenant. Get your sorry butt aboard and start your pre-flight."
For a second, Whist thought Diz was going to argue the point, but the Reaper just shrugged.
You heard the man, he added over his shoulder as he headed toward the dropship. Everyone mount up. Aaron, you'll need to unsuit. I'll give you a hand if you need it.
Why does she need to unsuit? Whist asked.
Because I'm flying, I'm unsuited, and I don't want a rookie in powered armor at my back, Diz said.
Crookshank muttered something under his breath.
Lieutenant.
That's all right, Colonel, Aaron said quickly. I can use the practice anyway.
Fine, Crookshank growled. Get going.
The scientist, the ghost, and the Protoss headed off after Diz. Whist let them get a few steps away, then moved closer to Crookshank.
So this is really it, sir, he murmured.
Five of us is the whole damn team.
Turns out you and Hawkman are the only ones aboard with forest and jungle combat experience, Crookshank murmured back. Besides, this isn't supposed to be a combat mission.
Yeah, I've heard that before, Whist growled.
Well, this time they say you can believe it, Crookshank said. But watch yourselves.
He nodded toward Diz as he disappeared into the dropship.
And watch him, too.
Whist looked at the empty dropship hatchway.
Any reason in particular?
He's a Reaper, Crookshank said.
Isn't that enough?
Not if you know something else about him, Whist said. What crime he was tossed into the Reapers for, maybe?
Crookshank snorted. Look, Sarge, I don't even know his real name. Most of them get new ones when they go in, precisely so jarbrains like you don't waste time sniffing around. I mean, come on, a Reaper with a name like Hawkman? Right.
Yeah, I noticed that, Whist said.
So why is he in command again?
Because he's the ranking officer, Crookshank raised his eyebrows.
And don't forget that, either.
Hey, Whist, you coming?
Diz's voice echoed out through the dropship's hatch.
Cause if you aren't, I'm calling dibs on your CMC.
Good luck starting it, Whist called.
He gave Crookshank a final brisk nod before resuming his walk toward the dropship.
Never assume, Sergeant, Diz called back. Come on, move your butt.
Whist frowned. So was Diz saying he could start someone else's lockdown armor? Did that mean he'd been a vehicle thief or a lockbreaker? He paused at the door as a sudden thought struck him.
Colonel, you said these psi blocks disrupt Zerg communications. What's it going to do to Ulavu?
I don't know, Crookshank said. And frankly, I don't care. Whist nodded.
Got it.
This was going to be fun, all right.
Absolutely.
The greeting protocol for a face-to-face with the Protoss hierarch was complicated but reasonably straightforward. Valerian made it through without stumbling, and from the tone of Artanis's responses, he gathered he'd gotten it correct, or at least close enough that the Protoss was satisfied. Then again, maybe everyone simply had more important matters on their minds than etiquette.
You're clear on things up here, Valerian murmured to Matt as the Protoss warriors and marines began filing into the shuttle.
Very clear, Matt assured him. First sign of trouble, we drop a full screen of Vikings and Banshees to cover your withdrawal.
Assuming Artanis agrees to leave.
I don't think there's any question that he'll be ready to bug out whenever you are, Matt said grimly. He trusts Zagara even less than you do.
Who said I trusted her at all?
Matt shrugged slightly, his gaze shifting over Valerian's shoulder.
Them, maybe, he said. Or at least her.
Frowning, Valerian turned. The Marine, Sergeant Cray, was just disappearing into the dropship as Crookshank gestured loading orders to the techs with the Marine and Reaper armor.
Which her? Dr. Wyland?
I was thinking more of Tanya Caulfield, Matt said. I was just noticing that you're sending one of the ghost's most secret weapons straight into Zagara's hands.
Not exactly straight, Valerian corrected. You have a point?
My point is that if Zagara takes Caulfield alive, or even freshly dead, she and the Zerg will have a brand new chunk of Terran genetics to play with, Matt said grimly. We saw what they did with Kerrigan.
and hydralisks with poisoned needle spines are bad enough. Imagine one that could create fire, too.
Understood, Valerian said. Understand, in turn, that with this much Dominion and Protoss firepower arrayed against her, Zagara would be hard-pressed to escape if shooting started. Grabbing Caulfield would gain her nothing except to give the lie to her stated desire for peace.
He turned back to find that Matt was staring at him.
What?
Are you saying you're setting her up as bait? Matt asked, sounding dumbfounded. Valerian, that's... He broke off.
That's what? Valerian demanded. Strategically risky? Tactically unsound?
Something your father would have done, Matt said bluntly. Using people for his own ends. Valerian snorted. Wake up, Matt. Using people is something military and political people like us do every day.
In order to achieve victory, Matt countered. We send some to their deaths so that others will live, but not this way, not as bait, not a young and inexperienced woman?
Matt's lips compressed. Fine, not a young and inexperienced woman, especially not one who could be a vital military asset to the enemy.
Valerian sighed. Look below you, Matt. Look at what the Zerg have accomplished. If this is a trick, if they're preparing for another all-out war, they could roll over every planet in the sector with nothing to stop them. If Zagara is planning treachery, our only hope is to find out about it while the swarm is still more or less localized.
I know, Matt said quietly, but there has to be another way.
There isn't, Valerian said. But now flip the situation over. The Dominion is vulnerable right now with food and refugee issues. The Protoss have their own vulnerabilities, yet Zagara hasn't launched an attack on either of us. More than that, she's holding out the hope of helping us solve some of our problems. Add together the current risk and the future hope, and the fact that Caulfield is flanked by a tough pair of war veterans, and I think it's a chance worth taking.
Emperor Valerian.
Valerian turned to the shuttle. The last of his bodyguards was standing at the hatchway with one of the Dark Templar across from him, both waiting for their leaders to board.
Keep an eye on things, Matt, Valerian said, touching his friend on his shoulder. He then strode toward the Protoss ship.
I will, Matt called after him.
His arguments were sound, Valerian knew. The strategy was risky, but necessary. And it wasn't the kind of cold-hearted move his father Arcturus would have made. Not at all.
Chapter 6 From high orbit, Valerian noted the planet's new landscape had looked incredible. Skimming along the surface at barely 1,000 meters above the ground, it looked utterly impossible. It wasn't just the colors and greenery. It was the sheer range and variation involved. He'd seen plenty of ecosystems in his years as an archaeologist, and Gist ranked up there with the most vibrant of them. Only in a handful of places could he still see the blackened scars left by the Protoss incineration over a decade ago, and even those were in the process of being overwritten. It was a far cry from the complete devastation of Chausara and the other planets that had been incinerated during the war. There, some sparse flora had started to return, but it was nothing like the aggressive plant life here. Perhaps a bit too aggressive? Zagara had suggested that the Zerg technique could be used to revitalize damaged Terran cropland, but Valerian had seen what could happen when non-native plants and animals were introduced into an unprepared ecosystem. Generating enough wheat and corn to feed the Dominion would be a hollow victory if the rest of the plant life was devastated in the process. Could that be what this was all about? The Zerg had failed to overrun Terran and Protoss territory using faunal infestations. Had Zagara decided to try a floral approach this time around? For that matter, was Zagara really as fully in command of the Zerg as she claimed? The Zerg leadership had been incredibly fluid, some would say slippery, over the years. And at the moment, there was no proof that there wasn't someone off in the shadows pulling Zagara's strings.
I saw Ulavu aboard your ship.
Valerian blinked. All the glory of Gist flowing past beneath him. All the darker questions about what the Zerg were up to pressing in around them, and Artanis was bringing up Ulavu?
Yes, he was there, he confirmed. I wanted him along for any special insights he might have about the Zerg.
As well as insights he might have about the Protoss.
That as well, Valerian admitted, wondering uneasily if Artanis would take that the wrong way. After all, he'd known even before leaving Kor Hall that Artanis was gathering a Protoss task force at Gist. Theoretically, the Hierarch should be able to offer any Protoss insights that Valerian needed.
He has served you well?
His work with us has been exemplary, Valerian said, feeling his forehead creasing. The last time Ulavu had even come up in conversation with the Protoss was over 3 years ago, when one of Artanis' aides had flatly refused the Dominion's final offer to return the wayward researcher to his people. Valerian had never found out what Ulavu had done to warrant such antipathy, but it had been abundantly clear that something was going on beneath the surface. This probably wasn't the time or place to go into those details. On the other hand, given that Artanis had brought up the subject, maybe it was.
I'm distressed, though, that he seems to have been ostracized by his fellow Protoss, Valerian continued. I hope we aren't the cause of that rejection, either Terrans in general or the Dominion in particular.
Don't concern yourself with Ulavu or his relationship with the Protoss, Emperor Valerian, Artanis said. He serves you. That is sufficient for the present.
There was a pause, and Valerian sensed the Hierarch's mental communication being widened to everyone aboard the shuttle.
Are there indications of Mutalisk or Devourer presence nearby? Are there other signs of Zerg betrayal?
One by one, the negative responses came in. Telepathic whispers from the Protoss in the shuttle, louder verbal ones from the Marines who'd been given spots at the various sensor displays. Psi-boosted calls from the Protoss manning the Phoenix escort ships.
We must continue to be vigilant, Artanis said.
Agreed, Valerian said.
Had the Hierarch sounded disappointed just then? Was he hoping that Zagara had set a trap for them? Maybe he was. Maybe he was hoping for an excuse to incinerate Gist again, to kill every Zerg down there. Maybe down deep, Valerian was hoping the same thing.
The communing structure has appeared ahead, one of the Protoss reported.
Valerian frowned at the displays wrapped around his seat. There it was, just coming into view on the horizon. It towered over the surrounding landscape like a white volcano, its surface twisted and textured like everything else the Zerg created.
Search for indications of Zerg in the region, Artanis ordered.
The search is ongoing, Hierarch. There are no indications of Zerg presence outside the communing structure.
And with nothing bigger than short bushes in the area, it would be hard for Zagara to hide anything large, Valerian pointed out. At least, nothing that wouldn't have to dig itself out of hiding before it attacked.
Scan the inside of the structure, Artanis ordered, not acknowledging Valerian's comment.
Either he'd already reached the same conclusion, or he didn't think the statement merited a reply.
Scanning is difficult, Hierarch Artanis. The carapace is thick and strong. There are no discoverable anomalies as of yet.
Understood. Continue.
And make sure the readings you get match those we got from orbit, Valerian added.
Artanis turned to him.
You believe that the Zerg can affect our eyes or our senses?
Zagara was with Sarah Kerrigan when Kerrigan disappeared, Valerian reminded him. She already told us Kerrigan gave the Zerg the gift of choice. Who knows what other gifts or toys she might have given them?
A fair question, Emperor Valerian Mengsk, Artanis conceded. All Protoss, be especially watchful for such effects.
2 minutes later, they were there. Measurements from orbit had indicated that the central cone opening was more than big enough to allow a shuttle and the Phoenix escort to enter. But it was only as the Protoss pilot began lowering them into the cone that Valerian realized how much bigger than the Protoss craft it actually was. Not only did they have plenty of clearance,
but even at the tightest spots, they still had some maneuvering room. "There is evidence of forced erosion at the apex of the cone," one of the Protoss reported. Valerian frowned at his displays. Had Zagara, seeing the size of the vehicles her guests would be arriving in, quickly peeled away the top of the cone to make the opening larger? Of course, it might not have been entirely for her visitors' benefit. With the newly enlarged opening, there was now also enough room for a mutilisk or even a huge devourer to enter, should Zagara have betrayal on her mind. Still, as Valerian had already noted, there were no hiding spots for anything that big within 50 kilometers of the structure. Before an attack could reach them, the ships monitoring the situation from orbit would have plenty of time to sound an alarm.
"Danger! Hierarch Artanis, danger!"
Valerian's eyes flicked across the displays, his stomach wrenching into a knot. What the hell?
"There are several clusters of infested flora arrayed around the edges of the structure's floor," the Protoss continued. "There may be risk of contamination."
"I don't think so," one of the Marines said. "All the plants are in sealed display cases, something organic, but it pings like steel glass."
"There is no proof that the undersides of the cases are sealed," the Protoss countered.
"Who puts something in a case and then leaves its butt hanging out?" the Marine scoffed.
"That is enough idle speculation," Artanis said, cutting off the budding argument. "Draw in air samples as we descend and analyze for signs of Zerg hyper-evolutionary virus. We will not disembark until we are assured the interior is sterile."
He turned to Valerian, and Valerian sensed him once again focusing his communication.
"We do not wish to inhale plant spores, whether benign or otherwise."
"Agreed," Valerian said grimly. A motion on one of the displays caught his eye. Zagara's entering the main chamber. And she wasn't alone. Walking a few steps behind her was another Zerg, nearly as big as the Overqueen, with a flat face, several green eyes, at least four, and large, glowing blisters along the sides of his head and neck. Along with the usual Zerg manipulative claws were a pair of shorter arms with disturbingly human-looking hands. The two of them were heading toward a section along the chamber rim that was devoid of the plant cases, and had instead been set up with several chairs and a couple of low tables. A touch on the zoom control revealed that the tables held flasks of various liquids and small cake-like squares. As if Valerian were going to eat or drink anything offered by a Zerg.
"There is sufficient room for a landing," the pilot reported. "Shall I begin the descent?"
"Begin the descent," Artanis confirmed.
It was an odd feeling to be inside a Zerg structure, and Valerian felt a twinge of claustrophobia as the shuttle floated to the floor. But there was no attack. There were no spores or other Zerg infestation agents in the air outside, and Matt's reports from orbit continued to confirm that the surrounding couple of hundred square kilometers were clear of threats. The only sizable Zerg nearby was Mukov's Leviathan, which had set down 20 kilometers away from the conference building, and it was far too big to get inside. For a long moment after they landed, no one spoke. Valerian found himself holding his breath, waiting against all signs and logic for a last-minute attack. But the attack didn't come. Zagara and the other Zerg remained where they were. No Zerglings or roaches or drones burst forth from hidden chambers, and the air analyzers remained a steady green. Beside him, Artanis stirred.
"Begin the disembarkation," he ordered. "Let us see what Zagara wishes to show us."
The High Templar and Dark Templar went first, their psi blades and warp blades blazing out from the focusers on the backs of their gauntlets. The Marines were next, followed by Valerian's bodyguards, their weapons likewise held high and ready. Valerian watched on the monitors as the mixed group of warriors arranged themselves in a double semicircle around the shuttle's base. Through it all, Zagara and the other Zerg remained motionless at their chosen spot by the chairs and tables. Artanis gave it another moment. Then, after gesturing to Valerian, he unstrapped and led the way out of the hatchway and onto the hard floor. Side by side, they headed towards Zagara, their guards falling into flanking positions around them.
Zagara waited until the group reached the chairs. Then she slowly lifted her arms.
"I greet you, Hierarch Artanis," she said. "I greet you, Emperor Valerian Mansk. May I present Abathur, Evolution Master of the Swarm?"
"Over Queen, Evolution Master," Valerian said, nodding a greeting to each of them. So that was a Zerg Evolution Master. There had been rumors of creatures like that, but they'd never been fully confirmed. "Thank you for your invitation."
"Thank you for accepting it," Zagara said. "Please, come closer. Sit. Partake of refreshments if you desire."
Her mandibles clacked twice.
"And then let us discuss how we may usher in a new era of peace among our peoples."
Aaron had heard any number of horror stories about the general craziness of the Dominion Reaper Corps. It was with a certain degree of surprise and a high degree of relief that she watched Lieutenant Halkman bring them to a smooth landing on Gist's surface. Of course, the fact that Halkman had insisted they call him Diz hadn't helped her confidence level any, especially when she asked if it was short for Dizzy, and he told her it was short for disaster.
"Okay, we're here," Diz announced as the whine of the engines faded away. "Whist, Tanya, you're up."
"Right."
Sergeant Cray, Whist, as he'd insisted everyone call him, confirmed as he popped his restraints.
"The rest of you relax while we check things out."
"There are no Zerg near the dropship."
Aaron's body twitched hard against her restraints as Ulavu's words echoed through her brain. As a xenobiologist, she'd naturally read a lot about the Protoss, and she'd thought she understood them pretty well. But reading about psionic communication and actually experiencing it were two very different things.
"Glad you think so," Whist growled as he walked to the back and started climbing into his armor. Clearly, he wasn't thrown by having alien thoughts bouncing around the inside of his skull. "You don't mind if we check it out for ourselves, do you?"
"Not at all," Ulavu assured him. "Shouldn't the rest of us at least suit up?" Aaron asked hesitantly, watching with secret envy as Whist climbed with quick efficiency into his CMC combat suit. Her own attempts at getting into the armor aboard the Hyperion had been utter embarrassments. Her attempts to get out of it before the dropship launched hadn't been much better.
"Nope," Whist called over his shoulder. "If there's trouble and Diz has to do a quick dust off, you don't want to be halfway into your suit. Trust me."
He paused long enough to give her a pointed look.
"Besides, can you even get into it alone?"
Aaron felt her face redden.
"Probably not."
"So, there's that."
He finished sealing his suit, pausing with his visor open.
"Tanya?"
"Ready."
Aaron looked at the other side of the dropship, a shiver running up her back. She hadn't read nearly as much about ghosts as she had about Protoss and Zerg, mainly because there wasn't a lot about the program that wasn't classified. Still, as with Reapers, there were plenty of disturbing rumors about them.
"Let's do it,"
Whist said, sealing his faceplate. He pulled a pair of Gauss rifles from the rack by the aft drop ramp, then slung one over his shoulder and cradled the other in ready position.
"Diz!"
In response, the ramp dropped down, its far edge slamming against the ground with a thud that Aaron felt straight through her seat. A second later, Whist and Tanya were outside, one breaking left, the other breaking right. Aaron stared at the greenery at the foot of the ramp, her mind spinning in a dozen different directions.
"Clear!"
Whist's crisp voice came over the dropship speakers.
"Olly olly oxen free."
"That means we're cleared to go," Diz translated, popping his straps. "Aaron, you need help getting into your CMC?"
"I will assist her," Ulavu said before Aaron could answer.
"Really?"
Diz asked.
"Okay, sure, let me know if you need help."
Aaron said, taking a step backward before she could stop herself. Diz noticed.
"Trouble?"
he asked. Aaron gazed at the alien who had stopped at her reaction.
"No,"
she lied.
"Good,"
Diz said, turning back to his own armor.
"Do not be afraid," Ulavu said, starting toward her again. "I will not harm you."
Aaron bit back the reply that wanted to come out. Maybe he wouldn't hurt her, but his race had hurt a lot of other people. Despite their claims of honor, the Protoss had the blood of millions of Terrans on their hands. Had they ever acknowledged their crimes? Or even admitted that they'd made mistakes if they still claimed the destruction was necessary? There was no denying the Protoss were an ancient race, but without a better sense of ethics, Aaron would never call them an honorable one. Still, this wasn't the time and place for a philosophical or moral discussion. Their job was to figure out what the swarm was up to. If that meant working with a Protoss, so be it. Even if it meant letting him close enough to help her get dressed. To her mild surprise, Ulavu had no problem at all getting the various pieces of her armor to fit together in the right places and in the correct order. But then, he had just seen Whist get into the same type of suit. Protoss were supposed to be quick, strong, and graceful. Apparently, they also had excellent visual memories. 4 minutes later, they were all outside. 10 seconds after that, Diz had sealed the drop ramp back into place, and the five of them were alone on an impossibly lush planet, almost certainly surrounded by Zerg.
"Okay, Aaron, this is your show," Diz said. "Which way?"
Aaron keyed in her heads-up display, rather pleased that she had remembered how to do it without any false starts.
"That way," she said, pointing between a pair of small hills. "About 30 kilometers.
Carefully, she began walking. Left leg, right leg, left leg. She was getting the hang of this. She started up the saddle point between the hills.
"Hold it!"
Tanya snapped. Aaron did her best, but she was already halfway into her step. She was on a slope, and she didn't have her balance reflexes yet. For a fraction of a second, she teetered, then slammed straight down onto her faceplate. The inside of the armor was padded, and there was strategically placed crash webbing to protect her head and torso. But the impact still knocked the air out of her. Cursing silently, she pushed against the ground with one hand, levering herself up onto her side, and froze. Staring down at her from no more than 10 meters away was a full-grown Hydralisk. The field manual said that Hydralisks were the swarm's shock troops of choice. Lying in front of one, Aaron had no trouble believing that. The creature was an armor-plated serpent, its torso permanently reared like a cobra or rattlesnake, the whole thing rising to nearly twice the height of an armored marine. From Aaron's position, it looked a lot bigger. Its long head stretched back nearly half the standing height of its torso, lowering its mouth to within easy reach of its victim. Its long arms ended in tri-bladed scythes backed by twitching, striated muscles that could easily slice through a marine combat suit. Dimly, she was aware that Diz, Whist, and Tanya all had their weapons up and trained on the massive Zerg. But in that splintered moment, all she could see were the dead eyes and serrated mandibles pointed in her direction. All she could hear was the coldly analytic note in the manual. Hydralisks have hundreds of poison-tipped needle spines that their unique musculature can throw at near hypersonic speed. All she could feel was the thudding of her heart and the low throbbing of her armor. The splintered moment passed. Another took its place. And with a small shake of its head, the Hydralisk turned and slithered away. It moved around a pair of bushes and disappeared behind a line of trees.
"I'll be damned," Whist muttered, lowering his gun. "I guess these Psi-block gizmos work."
"Or else Sagara was telling the truth about a truce," Tanya said. "You all right, Aaron?" Aaron nodded, frowning. The thudding of her heart was starting to fade, leaving the gentle throbbing of her armor as the only sensation through her skin. Only the throbbing wasn't coming from the armor. She could tell that now. It was coming from outside the armor.
"Personally, I believe in magic tech more than I believe in magic Zerg," Whist said. "Aaron, say something, kid."
"I'm okay,"
Aaron said, belatedly remembering they couldn't see her nod her head inside her helmet.
"Well then, get up and let's get going," Whist said. "So did Crookshank mention why we're the only two who got these block things, Diz? Sounds like something that would be damn handy for all of us.
It was probably so that when you and I get stomped, everyone else can call for help, Diz said. Seems like the blocks do a real number on long-range comms.
What do you mean?
I mean, they knock them out completely, Diz said. I haven't been able to raise the Hyperion since we turned them on.
Oh, well, that's just great, Whist growled. Crookshank could have at least mentioned that.
He could have if he'd known about it, Diz said. We're the field test, remember? Aaron, you need a hand?
No, wait, I'm listening to something, Aaron said. Can everyone be quiet a minute?
The others fell silent. Aaron strained her ears, trying to get a handle on the elusive sound. It was unlike anything she'd heard before, but it reminded her of machinery? Voices? Impulsively, she rolled onto her back and pressed her helmet against the ground. And there it was.
So what is it? Whist prompted. Nap time?
It's coming from the ground, Aaron said, listening hard. Or through the ground. It's like a combination of machinery, voices, and singing.
You sure you're not hearing something in your cooling system? Diz asked. Maybe the turbines, all of that's right there on your back.
It's not that, Aaron assured him. It's like I said, machinery, voices, and singing.
Zerg don't use machinery, Diz said, and as far as I know, they don't sing.
It's not something psionic either, Tanya put in. Ulavu's not getting anything.
Yeah, well, he also didn't spot that Hydralisk sneaking up on us, Whist pointed out. Psyblock messing with you, Ulavu.
There is a small effect, Ulavu admitted. But I continue to be capable of sensing notable Zerg presence.
Notable? Whist echoed. You mean like more than one at a time? Great. Let's hope Zagara doesn't figure out she can send them in single file. So where is this Zerg dance party of yours going on, Aaron?
I don't know how far away it is, Aaron said, fighting back her frustration.
They didn't believe her. None of them did.
Can you help me get this off? She added, fumbling with her helmet. Maybe it'll be clearer that way.
Yeah, hang on, Whist said. There's a trick to it.
It took a minute, but he got it off.
Now what?
Now I try again,
Aaron said, pressing the back of her head against the ground. The grass felt prickly, but not painfully so.
Let me try too, Tanya offered, pulling off her visor.
She lay down on the grass beside Aaron. And for the first time since they'd left the Hyperion, the two women were off the group comm circuit.
Can I ask you a question? Aaron said in a low voice. A personal question?
There was a moment of silence.
All right, Tanya said, her own voice studiously neutral. Ulavu?
Aaron said, nodding her head microscopically toward the Protoss.
What's his story?
It's not a secret, Tanya said. Some ghosts found him wandering around the edge of a battlefield after all the shooting was over. He told them he was a researcher and that he'd gotten lost. They took him back to Ursa, cleaned him up, and contacted the Protoss, who didn't want him back. Aaron frowned.
Why not?
We don't know, Tanya said. Or at least I don't know. Maybe someone higher up the ladder knows. Why do you ask? Aaron hesitated. This was probably going to sound extremely racist, but Tanya had asked.
I just wonder if we can trust him, that's all, she said. I mean, they did burn off Chao Sara, and
point one, that was over a decade ago, Tanya cut in. Point two, they've paid for their actions. Point three, Ulavu isn't a warrior. He was nowhere near Chao Sara, and I would be grateful if you wouldn't pin your prejudices against his race on his back. Clear?
Mentally, Aaron shook her head. She knew Tanya would take it wrong. I'm sorry, she said. I just,
well, don't. Abruptly, Tanya pushed off the ground and rose back to her feet.
Well?
Whist asked.
I hear it too, Tanya said, her voice calm and back to normal. I'm not sure I'd call it singing or machinery, but I get the voices and the mechanical noises.
So we know something's there, Diz said. I don't suppose you can figure out where it's coming from.
It's a little hard to pin down, Aaron said.
After rolling back onto her stomach, she pushed herself up to kneeling and then to standing, not nearly as smoothly as Tanya had managed. Still, her balance seemed better this time.
but as near as I can tell, the direction's the same as the focal point we're heading for.
I guess we better get down there then, Diz said. And I don't want to be here all day, so here's what we're going to do. We'll start off at a walk, and as you get used to the suit, we'll work our way up to a double-time jog. That's about 20 clicks an hour. He looked at Ulavu. Can you handle 20 clicks an hour?
Yes.
Ulavu's voice echoed inside of Aaron's head.
If you can't, we're going to leave you behind, Diz warned. Okay, Aaron, let's get your helmet back on and then go. Oh, and we'll let Wiss take point instead of you. That way he gets to the nasties before you do, okay?
Aaron looked at the group of trees where the Hydralisk had disappeared. Oh, yes, she said, a shiver running up her back. Yes, indeed.
There, Cruikshank said, pointing to the ground display. You see it, sir?
I see it, Admiral Horner confirmed, his voice giving nothing away. I'm not sure it's cause for immediate alarm.
Cruikshank ground his teeth. Vac heads.
Put them in space, and everything they ever knew about ground combat leaked straight out their ears.
Sir, those are all the ingredients for a classic Juno-layered defense, he said as calmly as he could. It's a favorite Zerg counterploy to armored columns.
I'm familiar with Juno lines, Colonel, thank you, Horner said just as calmly. I also know a typical Juno includes 1 to 200 Zerg. I'm only counting 10 down there.
Which should be more than enough for 2 soldiers, a ghost, and 2 civilians, Cruikshank countered. If the comms don't come up, and we can't warn them to go around that cluster, I strongly recommend we get part of my force ready to go down as a backup.
Horner rubbed a finger across his lower lip. Cruikshank held his breath.
I don't want to entangle more forces down there than we need to, the Admiral said at last. Not with all these Leviathans up here that could suddenly decide to pounce on us, especially not with Emperor Valerian elsewhere on the planet where he might need immediate extraction.
Which is why I only said part of my force, Cruikshank grumbled to himself. Understood, sir. And speaking of the Emperor, shouldn't we warn him that the truce might be failing?
I don't want to interrupt his meeting until we have more data, Horner said. For all we know, this could just be a bunch of random Zerg gathering around a water spring or something.
His lips compressed briefly.
But you're right. We can't simply abandon them. Go ahead and load 30% of your force, 30% only, for a possible rescue mission.
Yes, sir.
Cruikshank lifted his data pad and punched a single key, an efficiency of movement that wasn't lost on Horner.
I gather you already had the order logged, the Admiral asked.
Old habits, sir, Cruikshank admitted cautiously.
Some command officers hated when line officers did that, believing that it usurped their authority and made them little more than useless rubber stamps in the military machine, which, in some cases, was all to the good.
Yes, I remember the days before long chains of command, Horner looked back at the display, when the stakes weren't quite as high as they are now.
Yes, sir.
Though Cruikshank was pretty sure that the stakes always seemed high when you were in the middle of fighting for them. Did that say something about perception, or did it say more about human nature in general? And did he really care?
But this is the hand we've been given, Horner continued. So get down to the bay and prepare our cards, and hope like hell we don't need to play them.